Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for May the 18th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Let's go over to Richard Hurley. How you doing, Richard?
Hey, David. I'm doing pretty well. And how's it going, everybody out there? It's good to get back to be on the air again. Tonight we've got a very special guest, Lauren Price of the group Veteran Warriors, to discuss some important issues of great interest to veterans and their families. Lauren has been a guest on our show many times. It's always wonderful to have her back. She's got a lot to say. But before we get to Lauren, I want to remind everybody this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, and your questions. So call us at any time during the show, 1-888-627-6008. You may have a question for Lauren, or you want to chime in and talk briefly about some stuff that impacts you, give us a call. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Now, back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, let me introduce our special guest. Lauren Price is the founder of Veteran Warriors, a national veterans advocacy group, and she has led that organization since its creation in 2009. She has testified before Congress on veteran issues. And as far as her career training and experience, she earned a paralegal certification in 1987 and subsequently a bachelor's degree in criminal justice with a minor in psychology from St. Leo University. She has more than two decades of experience in the legal profession. She served in the United States Navy for a decade between January 2005 and January 2015, including serving for more than a year in Iraq as a convoy driver, as well as a public affairs officer in Baghdad. She also served as the Intel and Logistics Lead Petty Officer at the Defense Logistics Agency, United States Central Command. She co-founded the veterans group called Veteran Warriors with her husband, Jim Price, who is a retired Navy Senior Chief. Military service is a proud tradition in her family, with four of her five sons having served in the military as well. She's our guest again tonight on the Veterans News Hour to talk about some really important issues. So let's welcome Lauren Price to the Veterans News Hour. How are you, Lauren?
I'm just fine. Thank you so much for having me again. I really appreciate it, David and Richard.
Well, we're glad you could be with us. We have lots to talk about. I know the VA is in the process of changing the Family Caregiver Assistance Program. Now, before getting into details, Lauren, if you could start by giving us an overview, exactly what's the purpose of this Family Caregiver Assistance Program? What does it consist of?
Well, there's several pieces to it. There's actually what's called a general caregiver program and the family caregiver program. They both fall under the same mantle. And the family caregiver program was set up uniquely to allow a family member, typically it's a spouse or parent, but it could be a sister, brother, what have you, for those veterans who, after serving in the military, they become severely injured to where they would, in another scenario, end up either in a nursing home or assisted living or something like that because they need supervision, protection, or assistance with activities of daily living every day. And the law was passed initially in 2010, and it went live in 2011, and in Mission Act, which was enacted in 2018, there were three small, very small paragraphs in Mission Act that affect this program, one of which was one that has been much lobbied for, which was to expand it beyond the post-9/11 veteran to all eras on a tiered system, the first one being the Vietnam-era veterans, which were supposed to, if you go by the date of Mission Act, it was supposed to have been by June of this year that they would have been included and been able to apply for the program. There's also health insurance for those family members that are caring for a veteran. that otherwise would not have health insurance. There's a slew of other benefits, respite care, assistance with expediting things like prosthetics. And we all know prosthetics are difficult to work through, medical appointments, civilian care, and even some additional like therapies and things like this for the caregiver, which is a much needed process that does not happen outside of our world, outside of our community, is it's very difficult for the caregiver to go and get any kind of therapeutic assistance to deal with the challenges that they face.
I see. So would as part of this program, because you're talking about veterans who have been severely injured, perhaps they have traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, some serious condition, but they want to be able to live in their own home, and they have family members that are they're willing and able to some extent to care for them. But can you tell us to what extent the caregiver program would help these caregivers so that they are really capable? You know, they may be untrained in these sorts of things, and how did that program, or how is that program supposed to work, and what things like financial support is provided?
Well, one of the pieces is that there's a training program, and it was set up initially with Easter Seals that they set up. It's an online training program. It's death by PowerPoint. We all love that. But it's beneficial for the caregiver because it offers them some insights into who you need to call for specific things. And instead of just calling the primary care provider or the social worker, it's telling them, these are the different things you need to try, giving them some tools and some methods on how to handle a very new normal that their life will now be. The other part of this is there is a financial aspect to this particular program. This program was set up in a three-tiered program. Tier one equates to 10 hours a week of assistance with activities of daily living, safety, or protection for the veteran. And that sounds kind of scary, but it's actually, to give you an idea, if someone's in a wheelchair and they're 99% self-sufficient, but they still need the assistance, they're a paraplegic, and they still need assistance transferring to and from the bed to the chair, from the chair to the shower and back and forth. And they go and work and they have a fully functioning life, but they still need these assistants at home. That's about a 10-hour a week thing. Then we have the safety or protection. It's an and, it's an or. And those are veterans who have succumbed to traumatic brain injuries, TBIs, or post-traumatic stress. And it's not a disorder. It is now actually determined to be a brain injury. But the symptoms of those can be very mild for one veteran and very severe for another. And the caregiver may have to constantly remind the veteran that they're back home, that they're not at work, that they don't have to constantly patrol, that they don't have to stay up all night, or something as mild as reminding the veteran that they have to take medication because their traumatic brain injury has destroyed their short-term memory. They have to take medication. The caregiver will manage appointments and things like this. And as severe as we have several cases where the veteran is essentially now the mind of a child, and the caregiver does everything that a parent would do for a child. And those are the safety or protection issues that also fall under this. So tier two is 20 hours a week. And tier three, the highest tier, is currently at 40 hours a week plus, whatever that may be. And those cases, despite what people may think, it does not have to be that you're a quadriplegic or you're bedridden or you're on an intubator. It could be something as simple as that you have a traumatic brain injury as well as physical injuries that essentially you need someone 24 hours a day around you to assist you with either a physical aspect of your life, getting dressed, making food, or the mental aspects of you have to have managed the appointments and you manage their medication in cases they have to lock the medication up because the veteran doesn't know that they're not supposed to take 12 Vicodin in one day.
Wow.
It's a very complicated program, but it's actually very, very basic and very simple. The original law is only 9 pages long. And when the law, as far as laws go, it's actually really small and pretty easy to read.
Mm-hmm. Now, the law is first, program as first created, you said had 3 tiers. They corresponded to really to the amount of time, perhaps 10 hours for the first tier, 20 hours for the second tier, and 40 or more hours of care for the third tier. And did those for, I know this is a basic question, but for the benefit of our listeners, those 3 tiers, those corresponded to different levels also of financial support for the caregiver, because the caregiver, I'm presuming, may be forfeiting, you know, his or her own ability to work outside the home while they're taking care of this severely disabled veteran. Is that how it basically worked?
Yes, that's a huge part of it, is despite what people think, and I'll parlay an example here, is you have a veteran and the spouse has a full-time job while the veteran is still an active duty service member. They work, they bring in a second income, they have health insurance, et cetera, et cetera. The veteran, as a service member, gets injured and is traumatically injured to the point where he needs a 40-hour a week plus caregiver to manage his care. And I'm going to leave it at that because there's so many different pieces to that. Manage his care, whether it's physical, emotional, psychological, medical, whatever it is. And the program is set up that Tier 1 has the lowest level of stipend compensation. Tier 2 has a median range, and Tier 3 is the highest level, which the average median range for the nation is $2,600 a month. In many, many, many cases, that is not enough to cover the caregiver leaving their job. However, it's at least enough to, with some belt tightening and budget tweaking, it can keep them afloat and keep them in their current lifestyle. However, the issue of the stipend has become a major source of contention in Congress.
Meaning, does it, like we often hear, meaning it comes down to that it's a lot of money and Congress doesn't want to spend that money. Is that being too crass about it?
No, actually, just the opposite. It's Congress is completely fine with spending the money.
I see.
I have yet to meet a member of Congress, Democrat, Republican, Senate, or the House, who is not perfectly willing to support this program. Just the opposite. It's actually the VA that is has long had issue with supporting this program. The budget that's going into effect October 1 of this year will be over $1 billion. There are currently less than 20,000 veterans in that program. And that number has been essentially static for 2+ years because the VA does not want to hand that money out. They're convinced that, number one, veterans are defrauding the VA, which has been studied repeatedly and been proven false. Number two, that we should all get better, that all veterans should recover and move on and be able to be fully functioning members of society without any benefit of assistance. And number three, and the most important factor of this, is that the VA should be allowed to make all those decisions to keep people in the program, to keep the money, without anyone watching.
And so let me just ask you this, because it's my understanding, and I know you know this, all the details, but in the last few years, thousands and thousands of caregivers were essentially thrown out of the program. Is that correct? And really, what was going on with that? And I have some follow-up questions to that, but basically what was going on in the last few years where the VA was just pushing people out of the program?
Well, what we discovered in the late summer of 2016 was that there was a very concerted effort by VA leadership to cull the herd. And we've repeatedly coined that term because that's the only one that actually fits. They've culled the herd. We submitted a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request to the VA early on and asked for all the numbers of the people in the program going back to the inception of it and then going forward. And we asked them, how many people have you kicked out of the program? They weren't tracking this. But the math is simple. It's only basic addition and subtraction. It's third grade math. So we started tracking this. When they submitted the FOIA to us, what we discovered was that from January of 2014 until the end of January of 2018, they had removed over 40,000 families from the program.
Wow.
And then maintained the number of participants in the program under 20,000. And when we started questioning that with the VA central office, we were told, well, you must not be correct. These are your numbers, not ours. So you tell us. What we discovered was that there was a very concerted effort to cull this herd. There were hundreds of cases in each facility around the country, hundreds per month that were being kicked out of the program. We call it being unlawfully revoked. Revoked is the term that they use. That is a legal definition of being removed from the program. They revoked these people, telling them, congratulations, you've graduated. And there's no language such as that in the law. But these people who anticipated that this program, which was designed to, very specifically it stated in the law, to take care of those veterans who are going to require this kind of help the rest of their lives, to keep them out of nursing homes, they're being revoked because they, quote, graduated. And it didn't matter if they got better. The cases we looked at, we currently have over 3,000 cases in our case file that we have validated that they were legitimately eligible for the program, both medically and legally, and they were removed. And when they appeal, it's a closed appeal process that's maintained within the facility's region called a VISN, the Veterans Integrated Service Network. Basically, the regional office gets to make that decision. And everything stays within the people that already made the decision to remove you.
Now, if I could just ask you, Lauren.
Go ahead.
These decisions are being made on the medical side of the VA, correct, as opposed to the benefit administration? And then I wanted to segue into then what your thoughts were as far as due process and giving families an opportunity to appeal whenever they're being kicked out or revoked from this program.
Well, that's the most significant issue. The law itself, if you actually go and read it, and you can actually find it on our website at veteran-warriors.org. It's on our website in our documents. The law says that this is not a benefit, which is very, very important in the VA world. Benefits are like if you get disability pay from the VA for a disability you incurred while you were serving, it is not a benefit. And I'm quoting the lawyer. It says, it is a recognition of the service of the caregiver. And when I Googled that term one day, recognition of service, that is called a gratuity. That's a tip. That's what you leave your hostess, your waitress, your bartender. So that's what the VA decided this was going to be. This is a tip. This is not a benefit, which that then closes the loop. Caregivers who are actually The veteran is the person who has to be eligible, but it's the caregiver who has to apply, who has to maintain eligibility, and then has to appeal when they're revoked. And they only get to appeal to that local facility that just kicked them out, and then they get to appeal to their bosses, and all of whom work together every day, month in, month out.
And again, and it's all within the closed circuit of the Veteran Health Administration, the medical side of the VA, correct? Like typically, they'd have to apply, or they deal with someone at a VA hospital, correct? And then it might be kicked off the program, and they'd have to appeal it. And the level of appeal, if you want to even call an appeal or review, was just one step above it, and that's still within the healthcare side, right? That's what
exactly.
I'm trying.
Exactly. And that's, okay. The worst part of that is that we have a constitution, and every single veteran in this country made a decision to go serve this country, and number one, defend our constitution. And our constitution, the Fifth Amendment of our constitution, guarantees the right to due process. That means if you get arrested, they can't just take you directly to court and without an attorney and find you guilty and throw you in jail. It also means that government agencies like the Department of Veterans Affairs cannot arbitrarily make up rules to decide that you don't get any right to recourse. And the Department of Veterans Affairs crafted this in such a way, it is a closed loop, we call it, where the person who kicked you out and their immediate supervisor are the ones that get to decide whether or not your appeal is worthy to reinstate you. And no matter how many falsifications, no matter how many absolute fabrications show up in the record, they just, and I'm quoting the head of social work at James A. Haley VA Hospital, I'm quoting him, we just sign off. We're too busy to look at this stuff. They just wow. sign off on whatever the recommendation is. So what we have is, at currently, the number is 67,000 plus since January of 2014 that they have revoked from the program unlawfully.
Leaving less than 20,000 still being covered by the program, correct?
Yeah, still less than 20,000. They have not added, I will say this, we finally got some numbers because we have, we're obviously not on their friends list. We finally got some numbers, and they've added less than 200 in 2.5 years to the rolls. In 2.5 years.
And I know these numbers, you know, the human element gets lost in these numbers, thousands, 10,000. Could you share with us, without divulging, you know, names or, you know, too much personal information, could you give us an example of really the life impact of this for a severely disabled veteran who was clearly eligible for this program, and the impact on the family? Could you share with us, you know, maybe some examples?
I'm going to give you the one case that I've actually shared with members of Congress, because we've validated this case. I've spoken with the family members. I've spoken with immediate friends and everyone involved in the case. And we have releases to do this. I can't give the names, but I can tell you that it's in Prescott, Arizona. And in Prescott, Arizona, there were three guys that all served together that went off to war together. They went to high school together. They all enlisted. They went off to war. They all got injured. They all came home. Thank God they all came home. All three were eligible for the program. Their spouses all applied for the program and were put into the program under Prescott, Arizona. One of these guys lost two limbs. He lost both his legs. However, because of the scaffolding that this program allows the community and the family to set up, and that's what we call it, scaffolding. It is allowing this veteran to stand up again and be a functioning person. However, without that scaffolding, bad things happen. Well, Prescott, Arizona decided, well, actually, VA Central Office decided to remove hundreds of people out of the program. They removed 85% of the program in 1 month, in 30 days.
Wow. Wow.
Including all three of these men. The one guy with that had lost two limbs. They had two little girls, and they'd already gotten word that this was happening, and people were getting letters, and what was going on, and the scuttlebutt was crazy. And then he comes home. Now, mind you, he made the dean's list, taking online classes with Emory University at home, where he, his wife could manage his care and manage his schedule and everything else. He got the letter saying, congratulations, you have graduated from this program, which meant they lost the health insurance that's offered to this program, and they lost the stipend. His wife walked in the door with the two little girls and proudly announced that she was pregnant with their third child. He completely lost it. Over the course of the next few hours, he went off the rails completely. He murdered his wife and unborn child.
Oh, my goodness.
He is in prison. That is the worst case, obviously, but that is a factual case that really happened.
Wow.
Because of this garbage, all about the money, that 2,200, they were only getting 2,200 because it's based on your zip code, $2,200 a month. They revoked 85% of the caseload in 30 days.
Wow.
Wow. That is only one. Foreclosures, car repossessions, people having to move in with their kids, with their families, homeless, with children. I can't even tell you how many horror stories my staff cry and throw things and are angry and furious. And yes, we cuss like blue streaks because this is not necessary and it's not legal.
Wow.
We have fought for almost four years now to have this program audited, to have oversight from the White House, because the program has zero oversight and has this massive $1 billion budget. It has 600 employees.
Well, Lauren, let me ask you.
I do not know. Go ahead.
Why do you think Congress is really not paying attention, or maybe they're paying more attention now that, veteran warriors and yourself and other organizations have been bringing this to their attention? But really, what's now happening? What's to address all these problems? The tens of thousands of families that have been left hanging without this support, as you say, lives are being lost. Lives are being affected. So what's happening now? What is Congress doing? Well, what is the VA doing? And what do you see should happen?
The VA told us to our families. We asked them one very simple thing. We asked them to train, pardon me, all 600 of their employees on the law. Because that was the consistent, was that we had people telling us that you had to be bedridden, or you had to be on a ventilator, or you had to be a paraplegic, or you had to be in a wheelchair. All these random things that are not anywhere in the law. And as I said, the law is very small, and it's very easy to read. It could take a chimp to figure this out. And we sat down with the secretary's staff, his immediate right hand, and we were told that training their employees, We built a training program. Now, I've done this in the military. I built a world global training program for the military. This is what I do. We built one just for these 600 employees, and we offered it for free.
Wow.
They said no. They said, and I quote, it was a big ask. It was a tall ask to ask that these employees be trained on the law. We've had congressional hearings. We've had two separate roundtables about this. We have had meetings, endless meetings with members of the Senate, members of the House. Everybody gets pissed. Getting them collectively mad at one point in time is virtually impossible, especially after the pandemic. We are hoping the VA has tried. They tried 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, to change the rules of the program. And they did it very quietly, just like they did this time. And they filed this, and they hoped nobody would pay attention. And I have news for the Department of Veterans Affairs and Secretary Wilkie. We watch everything you do, every utterance, every syllable that comes out of the VA. We watch it all. So you will not ever be able to do this quietly. We
good.
Saw it then.
Yeah.
And we made sure Congress knew about it. And Congress, the House, sent the nasty gram from heck, I won't curse, they sent the nasty gram from heck to the secretary saying, don't you dare change what we did. And oh, by the way, in four pages, three separate times, they told him, you will not change what we did. You do not have the authority to change the law. That was 2.5 years ago. So back in December, the Department of Veterans Affairs decided they were going to do this again. Only this time, they're telling anyone that will listen and everyone and sundry across the country that it's all because of Mission Act, that they have all these mandates because of Mission Act. Mission Act, it is a massive bill, and it has to do predominantly with health care, and it's basically to make sure that veterans can actually get health care instead of waiting 18 months for an eye appointment or 15 months for a primary care appointment or a year for a health appointment. But there were three tiny little clauses, 161, 162, 163. 161, Section 161, said you will open the program to eras other than post 9/11 on a very specific schedule. Number two was you will stop using this closed computer system to keep all your notes where you don't share them with anybody, and you hide all kinds of secret, horrible things you do to people in there, and you will make a new one and make it public, and you will make a copy of the medical record so everybody can see it. And the third one was you will start telling Congress every single year what you're doing. Those are the three things. That's it. That's all. Yet the VA will have everyone believe, and I promise you, as of this very second, they are still trying to convince everyone that Mission Act mandates, that's the word they use, mandates that they make these billions of dollars in changes.
So, they're basically trying to do an end run around direct, clear language passed by Congress. They're basically ignoring it or twisting the words and just lying about it.
They're ignoring it and lying about it because they are bold-faced lying to the general public, to veteran service organizations and advocates like ours. They are turning around telling everybody, well, we have these mandates. The very first thing they did was set up what's called a special medical advisory group. To the tune of, mind you, hear this for one second. Every single meeting of this is a brain trust. This is an absolute think tank of some of the smartest people I've ever had in the pleasure of sitting in a room with. I got to listen to these people for 2 hours one day. They are brilliant. They are paying this group. The cost is over $1 million per meeting.
Wow.
And that group's been sitting since Mission was passed because VA says we have all these mandates we have to do. That group, Special Medical Advisory Group, has no idea that 99% of the things that they think need to be done are already mandated under the law. However, what's gotten worse in December, the Viet Ben, they issued proposed rules, rule changes to the program, and the very first paragraph says that these are mandated by Mission Act. They are not. It is a bald-faced lie, and I will tell the secretary to his face that they are a lie, because there is nowhere in Mission Act that it says that they get to change anything other than the era of service for eligibility.
And yet
so
they're taking
what they
it.
Decided was 231 pages later, everything from where you live to whether or not you help your veteran with more than one ADL more than once a day, the most insane amount of things, and all of them were solely to restrict, constrict, and shut down this program and make it so that it was nothing but a giant bucket of cash that would come in under the hospitals. Each facility gets this money separately for the program, and whatever's not used goes back to the hospital.
Well, there you go. I think that explains a lot of it, Lauren. Just, I know I'm not an expert in this area like you are, but that seems to explain the financial motivation for the various VA hospitals to incentivizes them to keep people off the program. And you mentioned, you know, this past December, VA came out with proposed new regulations. If I understood you correctly, like 230 pages of it. And now,
yes.
Is that correct? And then, so now, as everyone knows, whenever a bureaucracy like the VA proposes changes to regulations, there's a public comment period, or at least there's supposed to be. So, Lauren, tell us about what your organization has done in order to essentially fight this tremendous amount of bureaucratic red tape and nonsense that the VA has proposed. What's going on with
David,
that?
David, you're so kind. When I'm not on the air, David, the things I say about what this actually is, it's a giant truckload of manure. They issued these. Number one, the timing is everything. They issued these after Congress shut down for Christmas, hoping that no one would notice. Well, we noticed everything they do. And we set up a meeting with what's called the executive offices, which is the White House. And we made sure that they were aware that everything that was in there, because my staff sat down the day it was issued and did a marathon session going through their 231 pages of manure. And, oh, let's see, that's against the law, that's against the law, that's against the law. Oh, I'm sorry, none of this is legal. You have to amend the law. Oh, I'm sorry, you're doing this because Mission Act says that? Nope, 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 nope. Here's what Mission Act says, sorry. Then we sat down and started crafting our comments. In the midst of that, because our comments have to be filed on the Federal Register so everyone in the world can see them, and especially VA, we started drafting them. They're essentially the same as we've had for 4 years. But we were contacted by, it's called National Veterans Legal Service Program. And I'm going to pitch them a little bit because they do pro bono work for veterans. They're the most amazing organization out there that we've ever worked with in 10 years. And they contacted us and wanted to collaborate on our comments, which meant we were going to get a bunch of attorneys who have been fighting VA for their entire existence to help us make sure we crafted this perfectly. So we did. Five of us, including Bart Stichman, who's their head, and two other attorneys that work for him. And my staff, myself and my appeals director, spent the last 7 weeks crafting these. And then we handed it off to another law firm to make sure that they found every nook and cranny that the VA was trying to pull something out of. And we filed a 33-page comment. You can find it on the Federal Register. You can also find it up on our website. Our comments, which are collaborative and jointly with the National Veterans Legal Service Program, are up on our website. I promise you, every single person out there, whether or not they're an attorney or work in that field or work with the VA, they should read these, because this was, we took every single syllable that they said in that 231 pages and shoved it back in their face. Every time they said Mission Act, we were like, nope, sorry. Oh, let's see. You don't have that legal authority, because VA has forgotten that Congress exists. VA has gotten really, excuse the old-fashioned term, too big for its britches. They truly believe that they do not have to answer to Congress and that they can change law as they see fit. And they do not have that legal right. And they do not have the right to strip away rights from veterans and their families just because it would be financially beneficial to VA.
All right. So, Lauren, let me ask you, because I appreciate you sending me this the response that your organization, Veteran Warriors, as well as the National Veterans Legal Services Program, put together with the assistance also of a law firm. Was that the law firm of Sidley Austin? Am I correct? Or is
it... Yes.
Okay. That really an impressive, unbelievably detailed, point-by-point rebuttal. Now, here's my thought or concern, Lauren. So this is part of the public comment to this VA proposal, correct? What do you anticipate happening next? And should we be prepared to see some, you know, is litigation likely going to follow if the VA just essentially blows this off? Or do you see Congress perhaps having enough fire underneath Congress to do something about this? What do you see?
Well, we're crossing our fingers on the latter. We're crossing our fingers that VA is not so boneheaded and arrogant that they think they can push this through after there were over 274 comments filed. We've downloaded and read through every single VSO and attorney and law firm that filed comments. There were several that commented on due process. There were several that commented on the fact that VA does not have the legal authority to change the law. Most of them just basically commented on the fact that VA is arbitrarily trying to narrow the scope of the law so that they can constrict the program for an unapparent reason. And I'm using that term because somebody actually said that. We don't know why they're doing this. I have news for you. I look at their budgets every stinking year. I know why they're doing it. Because the money, any money left in any department under VHA, come the end of the fiscal year, come September 1, any department, x-ray, phlebotomy, oncology, or the caregiver program, which is under social work, if there's money left in it, guess where it falls back to? Back to the facility. This is not brain surgery. This is third grade math. Just add zeros to everything. We know why it's happening. What I'm hoping, if we can get past the pandemic and the summer break, because we are now faced with that, because we can't do any real lobbying over the summer, is that when we hit the fall, that VA is not arrogant enough to try to force these through, because we will. We absolutely will. We've had lengthy discussions. We will be fighting them. And whether it means we go to court and we challenge them on this, because we know we'll win, they do not have the legal authority to change these eligibility regulations, or we just convince Congress that VA is trying to take away their thunder. Whichever is necessary, we will do.
And look, so, Lauren, let me ask you,
my primary concern at this point is that we have, in our numbers, we have over 80,000 people that are eligible for this program, that 67,000 of them are not in it. We have another probably 250,000 veterans out there Vietnam era veterans that were supposed to be in it already. We're supposed to be eligible already, but because VA is dragging their feet and trying to make everything in the world hinge on whether or not they're going to start taking applications. That was one of the key pieces, and I will throw this out to one of the VSOs, is Independence Fund made a point of that they have used, we're going to have a new software, we have to certify the software, we have to do all these things, that they're holding off taking applications as prescribed by law on all of these things up to and including these rules. So now we're looking at another year. It's probably going to be another 12 months before whether or not these rules are going to come out or whether or not they're going to try to shove them through. And then if, you know, if we have to fight them, we will. We'll take them to court. We'll take them to Congress. But
right.
In the meantime, they're not abiding by the law, which says that they are supposed to start taking applications from these Vietnam era guys. So
let me ask you this, Lauren. What would you recommend that our listeners can do to support the great work that your organization, Veteran Warriors, are doing, and also in conjunction that you've been working with National Veterans Legal Services Program? What can our listeners do? Can they support financially your organization? And also, I know this is a very technical, legally complex subject. I know you've mentioned there, you know, people have been submitting comments, but what do you recommend as a practical matter? Should our listeners be writing members of Congress to continue to bring attention to what the VA is doing? Can they financially support your organization? What can people do to help?
Both. They can, number one, they can write to their member of Congress, they can call their office, they can email them. With summer coming up, Congress is going to be home in their districts, and they can actually make appointments and go visit, as long as COVID lets everybody, they can go visit with their member of Congress and explain their situation, how this would affect them. And they could explain how VA is refusing to abide by the law, because they can go and poll every single comment that's up there. There are a lot that are just private citizens that are caregivers that have filed their comments. But you can pull all of, like, ours and other organizations that have filed legitimate comments about what VA is trying to do. And you can have that in your hand when you go talk to your member of Congress and say, look, I need you to stand up. I know you're not on the VA committee. Great. It doesn't matter, because every single member of Congress, if they all stand up together, regardless of party, if they all stand up together and start screeching at the VA and say, wait one hot minute, you're not allowed to do that, VA will back down. The other thing is, yes, we do accept donations, and they can go to our website. There's a PayPal button on just about every page. I don't handle the web stuff, so I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. It's all on there. But I absolutely take the summer. COVID's finally letting up, and we have some opportunities to go and meet with our members of Congress, whether it's the Senate or the House, whether they're on the committees or not. They are members of Congress. They work for you. Go talk to them. Explain how this is going to affect you. Show them what the VA wants to do. Tell them to get mad, write a letter to the secretary, demand that the secretary back down and straighten up and fly right.
Well, that's great. Let me ask you this one, Lauren. What's your organization's website again? I know you've given it to us before.
It's www.veteran-warriors.org. And they can also, if they need to contact us, if they have case issues, we have several different members that handle these different things, whether it's the caregiver program or toxic exposures, or you just need help with dealing with the VA or other issues. We have people set up to do all of these things. Send us an email through the website. It's the best way to reach us, and we will respond to you.
That's great. I know we just got about a minute left. Lauren, you mentioned something briefly that maybe we can have you back on the show to discuss in more detail, is the the toxic exposure to the open-air burn pits. On some of our prior programs, you've discussed that issue in detail, and that's, as you know, the open burn pits used in Iraq and Afghanistan. Thousands of veterans sick, and many have died. In about 30 seconds, what's going on, if anything, in Congress right now?
Absolutely nothing's moving. But okay, no, I will nothing. Say this. There's two things that have happened. One is get on our public. We have a very public Facebook page, Veteran Warriors. It's actually on Facebook. It's Vet Warriors 1 is our Facebook page. You can get on there through our website if you need to. But most importantly, we just got word today that a legitimate study has been done, been working on for several months, from an organization that we work with, Hunter 7, was published. We'll be dropping that today. As soon as Congress gets back to work, we hope to drop a second bill. We have one right now to stop VA from refusing to care for veterans who are exposed to toxic exposures. And we're going to be dropping one hopefully this fall for stopping the DOD from open-air burning anywhere in the world. That is our big goal right now.
I see. And they, so they can find out more on your website, which is veterans-warriors.org, correct?
Correct.
Very good. Well, Lauren Price, thank you so much for all the great work that you're doing for our veterans, and thank you for being on our show tonight. As always, you have an open invitation to join us again in the future so you can keep our listeners updated on your organization's projects, including the Family Caregiver Assistance Programs and all the things that the VA is trying to get away with in violation of the law, as well as the open-air burn pits and other issues as well. So thank you again, Lauren, and we appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Richard. David, I really appreciate you guys having us on again to be able to update people. And anytime you guys want an update, just ask me. Even if you don't have time for me on the show, I'll be happy to provide it.
Great. Thanks. Keep up
the
great
Lauren.
Work. Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks. Have a good night, guys.
Too. Take care.
All right. So let me wind this up here.
Okay.
Before we go, I want to tell everyone about the Coaching in the Care program. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a rough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. At toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. Again, that Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal, or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I'd like to thank again our special guest, Lauren Price, who is a founder of the organization Veteran Warriors, for sharing her expertise about a very important and timely issue, which is the VA Family Caregiver Assistance Program and all that is going on, possible changes to that. I'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans of VA disability cases. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and we hope you'll all tune in next week, same time and station, which is 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, for another edition of Veterans News Hour. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and we hope you have a great week.
Good night. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on BBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.